distancing from family and friends, wearing a mask for a 12-hour shift, losing your job, closing the doors of your business. COVID-19 has caused a lot of stress. And now, several months into the pandemic disruption, we're finding a few of our coping mechanisms might be a bit maladaptive. So in this week's In the Moment podcast from SDPB, we're talking about taking care of mental health when everything feels upside down. Amelia Flint is an associate professor of psychology at Black Hills State University and a Black Hills counselor. She joined us with guidance on dealing with chronic stress. What are the signs of stress?
Oh, goodness, Lori. First of all, deep breaths, right?
Yeah.
We've been at this for a while, but a few of the signs that you can look for, forgetting things that you would kind of otherwise remember, things such as special occasions, even birthdays, anniversary dates, in any quote-unquote normal year, the things that you would remember, due to the high levels of stress this year specifically, you might find that you're forgetting them, and then feeling guilty about forgetting that. And so that's kind of one sign. Another thing to look out for is taking things personally that you wouldn't otherwise. Things as seemingly as simple as, oh my goodness, my friend didn't get back to me on that text message right away. I bet she's mad at me. I wonder what I did. And then ruminating on that, instead of thinking about alternatives like, well, she's a busy person, it might take her a little bit to get back. Things that you would do when you are not stressed out, you are now doing amplified, I guess. Short fuses, also another sign. Things more lately, especially depending on your own perspective on COVID-19, you might find yourself getting upset and thinking things like, oh, those mask wearers, make them pay for it, or those who don't wear masks, they should pay for it. And that's just an increased irritability towards things in general, and again, not something that you would normally get upset or irritable out. You find yourself having a short fuse. And then finally, listening to gossip and running with the gossip rather than finding fact for yourself. Well, I heard that this was happening, and so-and-so said this, and latching onto that as fact rather than truly finding the resource that will tell you the truth.
How do you get off the couch to, you know, whether that couch is inside your own head or whether that couch is the actual couch? Like, how do you take a step toward figuring out, well, what do I do now? Because I don't like this feeling and I can't do it forever. I have to take some action. Let's talk about what some of those actions might be.
Sure. First things first, small steps are an accomplishment. And so whether that's the inevitable couch in your head or you are trying to get up off of the couch, you want to look at progress rather than deficit, and especially now. And so whether that means you're getting up off of the couch and taking a walk around the block, that's one piece of exercise that maybe you didn't do yesterday. And so that is one step in the right direction. If you start worrying about, will I be able to do it tomorrow, that's where you've got to pause and then again reflect on the progress that you are making. So important for us to do right now. And then speaking of that, yeah, in order to start towards something different, I like that you said a new program. There are definite ways to just kind of make those small steps, like trying a new recipe that is healthy for you. Definitely starting journaling or a blog of some kind might be right up your alley. Anything to kind of get you out of your head or off of that couch and onto something new. And again, it's going to feel like 10 steps forward and then 9 steps back, but at least you have that one step that you have made forward and to count on that as insurance right now.
How important is that physical? I mean, how intentional do we have to be to increase the physical wellness in our lives? And how does that connect to our emotional stress management?
Goodness gracious, it's such a strong connection, to be sure. And it's very important, no matter. It's like you said, Lori, if you take that many steps each day, that's fantastic. And it's more than sitting on the couch and having zero steps total for the day. So physically, it's getting up, it's moving. And it's, I don't mean to simplify it like that, but certainly once you do that, you will be amazed at the mood difference that you will see. And that's where that mind and body connection is, right? It's doing something and suddenly you notice, you feel emotionally so much better, and it helps you take on the day with a different perspective.
How about sleep? How important is that?
Great question, Lori. Sleep and stress. One thing to start thinking of, obviously sleep is really important, and getting good, sound, quality sleep to the point where you sleep through the night and then wake up feeling rested. Those are two definitive points to know that you are having high quality sleep. And it starts with that bedtime routine. So you might want to reevaluate what you're doing at nighttime. Screen time, for example. Am I watching TV or am I checking my phone right before I'm trying to fall asleep? And then it's developing trust in oneself to remember the important thoughts. Some people are plagued by anxiety, and especially at nighttime, because they're ruminating or worried about what the next day would bring. Well, it's okay to have a little notepad next to your nightstand where you can write a few things down and trust that those thoughts will return to you the minute that you wake up in the morning, because that notepad is there for your reference, and it will serve its purpose in the moment that it's supposed to serve its purpose. But it does no good to stay awake and worry about those things when that's plaguing you of your next day and the energy that you need for the next day.
The social disconnection, the long-term effects of isolation, the things that we're feeling with conflict in our families. Let's dive into social connections for a minute. And where do you want to begin with, one, how important that is, and two, how to get it back in a way that's safe?
That is such a challenging question, to be sure. My best piece of advice with that is to over-exercise yourself in that area. So if that means sending a text message, scrolling through your phone and looking at your contacts and sending a quick text message, even to people that you wouldn't otherwise contact or speak with, then do that. That is a safe, socially distant way of communicating, hey, I care about you. This year's been rough. Just wanted to let you know I'm thinking of you. Those kinds of things. And you will be surprised the number of people that probably respond back to you. And in those moments, that's where you can feel gratitude. And for sure, especially in this season of gratitude, feel better in general. The intent is to reach out and be social in a safe way, but certainly overthinking or overdoing even that aspect right now. Hey, I know it's been a while since we talked. Let's set up a Skype meeting or a Zoom chat, and let's just check in. Even if it's 5 minutes, it's 5 minutes more than we had before.
Let's talk about what else? How about spiritual? Because this is another thing that for so many South Dakotans, you know, is just going to your congregation, going to your church, hearing, the Eucharist or the blessing or the prayers in community. How stressful can it be to be separated from those kinds of things if they were a touchstone in your life? And how intentional do you need to be if those are your touchstones to figure out, what's essential?
Yeah, very important. In fact, in psychology, we do talk about the six areas of wellness, and spiritual is one of those areas of wellness. And so if you neglect that, then the other areas of wellness, which are physical, social, intellectual, emotional, and occupational, can all suffer. So doing something each day right now to get in touch with your spiritual side, daily prayer, as you said, meditation, things to that effect, even if it means calling someone and praying with them over the phone or something that's going to help you and help them, by all means, it's so important to do.
Yeah. You mentioned a couple other things, occupational there. We're struggling at our jobs. Some people are out of work. Some people have had to completely rethink They're in a job that they're so exhausted with that they've decided, someday I'm not going to be a nurse anymore. It's time to look for something else or what have you. How does stress affect us at work, and what are some of the ways that we can engage in healthy behaviors that help us deal with that chronic stress, in the occupational realm?
Sure. So some signs that you are stressed at work. If you otherwise would enjoy your job and right now you find yourself being so critical, that is a sign that you are stressed at your job. And then it does become, well, I can't, miss work, or I might lose my job, or I'm kind of rethinking where I want to go. Then it does become a matter of evaluating your own priorities. Where are your values, and are they truly in line with what you are doing? If they are not, and a job is a necessity for you right now, perhaps for economic reasons, then simply examining and viewing the job as a place that's building your skill for what's next. So it's just a shift in your mindset, in your way of thinking, that you can then search for what we call transferable skills. I am building leadership right now. I am building courage. I am building the ability to organize well someone else's schedule and mine, and I'm achieving balance. And thinking about those things that your job then serves its purpose for, rather than focusing on the fact that you had a stressful day at work, or coworkers, or direct reports, or bosses are stressing you out. It really does change that mindset.
When is it time to make a call and find a good counselor, a good professional?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Lori. I would say sooner rather than later, and at the first sign of distress. Don't let that inner critic try to convince you out of it, or that mentality of, oh, you can deal with this on your own, interfere with that chance or that opportunity that you do have to seek help. There are plenty of highly qualified, licensed mental health providers in our state. And this is what we do. We do get the opportunity and the high privilege of listening to other stories and walking them through whatever is stressing them out, not minimizing the situation, even though the person themselves might be thinking, oh, someone else probably has it worse than I. Call and set something up and discuss what is really bothering you. It's confidential. And so that's important and might just be the key to helping you feel better too.
Are there ways to redirect ourselves and make this experience more meaningful overall? Kaya Ansorge is an adjunct instructor in counseling and psychological education at the University of South Dakota. She joined us with her thoughts.
Some of the things that I've seen the most are, one is, of course, we're getting really hooked into screen time. And that's one that we're trying to sort of escape our reality. We're not used to having to slow down. So let me back up a little bit. I think one of the things that's really interesting about this period in time, it is so historic and we'll always remember it. So it's really important for all of us to think about how we want to spend this time, because we're going to remember this. This is sort of a time out from our lives in a way. And it's so set aside that we'll always remember it. So we need to think carefully about how we want to fill that space. The other thing that happens is that we're not used to slowing down. Since the Industrial Revolution, we have been, and probably before that, but we humans are sort of programmed to sort of work harder, work faster. We're clued into efficiency and keeping going. And all of a sudden, we're stopped midair, and we feel like we'll just fall into the abyss. So a lot of times we respond to that by feeling anxious or depressed, and those are kind of two different responses. We also have sort of some of us have a very frenzied approach, that's sort of in the anxiety end of the spectrum. And how we respond is sort of each one of us has sort of a go-to. We all have a go-to of how we respond to stressors. But some of the things we do is we try to fill that space. So we might be shopping online too much. We might overindulge in screen time. We might get really crazy about what's happening in our own home space and start to go at each other in the home. We might try to fill this in other sort of maladaptive ways. Hmm. And so I think that one of the things we have to do is find some practices to get us out of that.
Where do we draw that line between behavior that is bad for us and behavior that is just something you should just forgive and move on because times are tough? Yeah.
Absolutely. That is a fabulous question because that's a really delicate tipping point because we also have these tapes that we're always supposed to keep going. It is okay to just lie down and relax. Part of it is that our entire culture and our entire world is sort of shifting right now. So lots of times right before a shift happens or while it's happening, we have to take breaks and we have to kind of rest our mind because everything's changing so fast. I kind of think of it as the end of the semester. A lot of times you'll feel kind of fuzzy and confused and then boom, it all snaps into place. And so as we are going through a transformation, that's kind of what, and our whole world is doing that. So we have been going forward in one kind of culture, but now we're all of a sudden moving into this technological world. We're using a lot of screens. So this is actually syncing up with that transition in a crazy way because we're trying to figure out what our world is. So right now, humans are living one foot in the real world and one foot in this sort of collective dream that we're building digitally. And so it's something we're straddling that's really huge. So we are going to lie on the couch and be on our phones. And that's actually part of building the collective dream. So that's okay. But when is it bad? It is bad when it starts to feel bad. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
So if you are doing that and it feels good, like, oh, thank goodness, I can just relax. And maybe you're even snuggling a loved one. That's what we're supposed to be doing right now. We're supposed to be healing and getting close to others and getting close to our own soul. But if it suddenly starts to feel like you're missing out on your life, then something's wrong. Now, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about, we have just a few days left, a little over a week, I think, until Thanksgiving. And this is a particular time in our country to think about thankfulness. And that is one of the most powerful ways to step into that joy, thriving, essential self. It's a little different than some of the other meditation practices, but it's one that is available to everybody, whether they're secular or religious. It's not a religious holiday. It is a secular holiday, but it is a deeply spiritual holiday. And it's really about sheltering in place. So it's interesting because it's what we do in our homes. And how do we start to turn our view? Okay, so this is it's like remapping your brain. And I think that's really essential during this period is that we have to have little adventures that we take in our brain because we're stuck. So as we take these little adventures, we have to kind of remap our brain. And one of them is thankfulness does this because we are thinking that we can control our outside world. And as soon as we start practicing saying thank you, and we need to step into this really carefully where it's very simple. You just say, thank you, thank you, thank you. And you can either pray it or you can use it as a mantra. And I'll get back to that in a second. But as we do that, it actually changes how we position ourselves in the universe. So when we think we have to get things done, like we're like, oh, I'm on the couch, I should be getting something done. That's always us grasping and struggling and trying to be or do something. This is totally different. It's like relax and receive. It doesn't mean we won't work. It means when we're doing the dishes, we're like, thank you to the dishes. Thank you for this moment of quiet in front of the dishes. Thank you for this moment of holding my child or my dog and just feeling its hair. Thank you for the sun in my face as I stand outside and I'm tilting my face to the sun. And as we step into that universe, we actually can experience love and joy and peace. Whenever we think we have to be being or doing, we can't actually experience it. We're always just creating the conditions. And we get stuck in that cycle of trying to create the conditions for love, joy, and peace. But you can't relax into it because you've forgotten how. Or I've forgotten how. We've forgotten how.
Right.
Saying thank you. Thank you helps us reopen ourselves to the possibility of even experiencing it, to feeling it.
Yeah. I want to ask you this because many of us live in households with other people, and especially children. Do you have to tell other people like this is, I mean, how structured is effective to invite other people into, you know, a gratitude practice or a space of gratitude with you? Or is it enough to just stand at the sink and, you know, put your hands in that hot soapy water and just feel grateful, you know, for your grandmother's casserole dish that you're hand washing?
Yes.
Do you tell people about it? Do you stand, like, what are you thinking about inviting other people to sort of experience that with you? Do you?
You know, I think inviting other people is really tricky.
Because
we humans like to control other people, and especially when we're all in the same household day in and day out, that is tricky. And we all are on our own path. And just sort of like when you're cleaning up your stuff, if you start sorting other people's stuff, that's really invasive. Even if you're supposedly trying to make their life less cluttered, really we need to start with our own stuff. And that's true inside of our being as well. So when we experience thankfulness, it often will invite others, and it will sort of inspire that in others, but in a very subtle way. And we can't control others. But I find that when I do step into that world and I start releasing, so that means that I'm laughing more, and I'm when someone says something offensive, it makes me laugh instead of be offended that they hurt my feelings. That changes the whole mood of the house, doesn't it? So that actually shifts things hugely in a really, really efficient way, really quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
You wanted to say more about this word mantra. Tell us what that means.
Yes, I did. Yes. Okay. So when we're thinking about using thank you as a mantra, and that seems like kind of a fancy word, but you can also just think of it as a prayer. Why I'm using the word mantra is because it has the relationship to meditation, which is, yes, you're going to think other things and they're going to come into your mind and you're not going to feel thankful. But as soon as you notice that you're not feeling thankful and you're not saying thank you, you can notice that and then just gently set it aside and redirect your mind towards thankfulness. So as we are, even the mask, think of even, which is kind of crazy, but think of our mask that we're having to wear all the time that we're starting to get used to. It actually provides some anonymity, and it provides us the superpower of invisibility if we want it. So we can start to find ways to be thankful for all sorts of things.
And I'm giggling because I told people that in the beginning, and my sister works in a restaurant. Of course, she has to wear hers all the time while she's moving. So her mask wearing experience is like really different from mine. And I acknowledge that. Uh-huh. But immediately when we got the masks out, I was like, cool. And for her, it has just been an entirely different experience of not being able to breathe and having to work through it and trying to exercise through it. And people have had such a different experience with those masks and what they mean. I mean, these healthcare workers, essential workers who are in these masks, no matter how much you might like them or how cute they might be, nobody wants to wear it for a 12-hour shift.
So
there was a moment of gratitude for the people who are willing to do that for me. Which connected to me to, you know, what am I willing to do for them as well? So gratitude can be, it can open a door, it seems then, from a simple, I'm grateful for this mask, to I'm grateful to these people that I wasn't thinking about 2 seconds ago. And now suddenly, you know, I am. Is that a fairly standard thing to sort of happen when you practice some kind of gratitude? Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking a lot about during this period, how do we combine empathy and joy? Because it almost feels wrong to be happy sometimes when there's so much pain and suffering going around, going on around us. And that, of course, is the case we're always experiencing now because we have awareness of what's happening in the whole world. There's always pain and suffering, but it's amped up right now. But I think that what you just focused on in terms of that piece of gratitude and how it can extend us forward with empathy, but not in a way that requires us to stay in a down spot. It allows us to have empathy and to reach out and hold someone as they're hurting, but then to also enjoy the feeling of holding them. So that enjoying the embrace and enjoying having joy in feeling love with someone else. And I think that's where, you know, when a kid falls down and they hurt themselves, and we can either just say, you know, buck up little guy. But if we don't, and we say, come here, little guy, and we put them on our lap and we hug them, and we can almost enjoy the experience of connecting through that suffering. And it doesn't mean that we don't care. It means that we actually truly empathize with that child.
Yeah.
But we're not. We're doing it through love.
I want to touch base on this notion of sort of political upheaval and turmoil, in the sense that it relates to fear of the future. Because in some ways, like you said, you know, we're getting to the point where we can start letting ourselves imagine a vaccine or imagine an end, you know, to some of the restrictions. Like, we can, depending on the day, we can see a light at the end of the tunnel and go, okay, you know, I'm feeling hope again. I'm feeling this might be different in the future. At the same time, we're still feeling this, you know, this cultural upheaval of the moment as we live through this history, which is terrifying or comforting, you know, depending on the day or, you know, your perspective. Let's talk a little bit about just building this life that is not completely driven by the engine of anxiety.
Yes. Well, it's a tricky balance. I think one of the things is to attend to the moment. Whenever we fully attend to the moment and not try to control for it, but reorient ourselves towards this position of thankfulness, we will find that we're probably okay in that very moment. You know, in 5 moments from now, we might not be okay. For instance, if you think about how many people right now, the people that are actually dealing with COVID in their home, they are actually in an emergency, and their loved ones are in an emergency, depending especially on how sick they are. Mm-hmm. But even though we all are in this milieu of nervousness about infecting others and blah, 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 we are not actually actively in an emergency at this moment. So if we can allow ourselves to breathe in those moments, that's super important for the moment. But looking forward for the hope, for the future. So now we do see a light at the tunnel. And it's both exciting and also a little menacing, because we've gotten maybe more where we're kind of more used to being at home and sheltering in place. And what does that mean? What does that look like in the future? Part of what we have to realize is that we are in a position of creating now. We're sort of co-creators in the universe in a very big way right now. Whatever we want our culture to be, we can create it. Everything is on the table again now. And that's really interesting, because there's people that have been working at home that find, you know what, I don't like working at home. I actually want to go work in the workplace. But there's others that are thinking, you know, I like it. I kind of like working at home, and I'd like to go live in a small town and work remotely. I think that's really exciting. There might be, if we allow ourselves to go ahead and be creative with this moment, there's going to be a whole range of choices that are exciting. And so we have to balance both that in the moment as well as looking towards the future. How are we going to create that hope? So one of the ways we created hope is we booked a trip for next summer.
Nice.
How are you creating hope?
Yeah. Well, and here's one of the things I think it's worth talking about is that is another transition. And I think for me right now, I'm not really thinking about next summer, because good gravy, that's going to be a whole different set of Like, I can't even think about that. You know, my daughter's home for college. You know, will she, once she can travel again, you know, she's doing all her college remotely from her bedroom. We've settled into this really nice life, you know, together here of mutual support. And if you start talking about like, oh, her, she's going to go back to New York at some point, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's good for her and I'm dealing with that So for some people, it's like, oh, there's another transition waiting for us ahead that can also feel
scary.
Even if it's a good transition, it's another change.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. It is. Absolutely. I totally agree. I totally agree. We're starting, a lot of us have started to build some comfort in this life, in this way of living right now. And so all of a sudden we're thinking, okay, this is going to change. So we have to be aware that we are the ones that are in control of our life choices. And maybe we won't make the same kinds of life choices we would have made before this happened. And that's okay. That's part of what change is about. And I think, you know, my mom got cancer when I was in my 20s. And one of the things that was really powerful during that period was to realize that we could live, nobody was going to dictate the rules for us anymore. There were no shoulds. Every day was, we didn't know what was going to happen the next day and how long we were going to have with her. And it changed our relationship with her, and it changed our relationships with ourselves in terms of how we were going to go forward in this life. And it, because I was at such a young stage. And I think this period is going to happen for, especially for the young people. It's going to absolutely change how they see the world.
Sometimes all it takes is to regain a little control over our home environment to give us the confidence in our own competence. Well, this holiday season promises to be like no other, but that doesn't mean it can't feature a few of our favorite things, especially if we make a plan. Lisa Woodruff is the founder and CEO of Organize 365. Through her online holiday blitz and Organize 365 podcast, she's been helping people across the country thrive during the tumultuous snow globe that is 2020. She joined us with some tips. Okay, so let's go back to this idea of a snow globe since the pandemic began, because this is something you've been talking about a lot. Tell us why that metaphor kind of makes sense for you.
I have, like, if I'm a Gen Xer, so I was a kid in the 80s, and you remember those snow globes you would get? They were plastic, and they had the fake snow in it, and you would just shake it, and it really had no point. But I feel like as a parent and as a female head of household, like I'm living in a snow globe. Every time I get everything situated for our family, it's like the universe picks up that snow globe and shakes it in and is like, go chase all the snow, find all your stuff. We just got put into quarantine, our personal family, yesterday. Mm. So again, you know, all again, trying to figure out what are we doing now? And as long as you prioritize what's important and let the rest of the flakes fall where they will, you'll do better.
And some of those flakes might be your family, but just kidding. All right. So talk about the holiday blitz, because the live videos are over. I went back and watched them, and I'm telling you, my Thanksgiving turkey is already in my freezer and I'm ready to go. And I have this feeling of contentment about Thanksgiving in a way that I haven't had in years, which is a surprise. But one of the things you told people to do is to ask your family, what do they want this holiday season? What's essential? Tell us about that simple act of listening before you go nuts planning things.
Yes. So this is actually our third annual holiday blitz. It's just a Facebook Live, Instagram Live thing I do each week, each year, and you can find it on YouTube, where I really try to help you figure out what are the most important things that you're doing in the holiday instead of just the unending to-do list that you'll never finish. And this year with COVID, it's really keeping your energy in check. And the first thing I tell you to do is before you start decorating for the holidays, before you go buy everything for the Thanksgiving dinner, just when you're with your family tonight, having dinner or just talking in the kitchen, ask them, what is most important to you at Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate? What foods do you want to eat? What smells do you want to smell? What decorations do you want to see in the house? And what's funny is they'll mention a couple of things, but not everything that you normally do, which will reduce your to-do list hugely.
What are some of the things that have been surprising to you when you've done this in your own family?
Well, like for decorations, I spend days decorating the house. If the Christmas trees are up, and we have two of them, the family thinks that's the same as if I put the garland everywhere and all the wreaths and everything else I put up. So now I put up a nativity set, two trees, and I can be done. I can do more if I want to for me, but for my family, they feel that the house is decorated.
Does that help get rid of the resentment then if you're, you know, wrapped in garland? You're like, nobody's helping me. You know, how can that kind of change just that family dynamic?
Yeah, I think especially female heads of household feel like we do a good job if our house looks the way we want it to look and if our to-do list is checked off. And if that is the expectation that you have, often you're doing 80% more than your family even notices. So if you notice the 20% that they are going to want to see and you get those done, then anything else you do is because you want it done. It doesn't need to be done. And you reduce your to-do list so that you can actually enjoy the holidays. And if you want to decorate every nook and cranny, do it, but know that you're doing it for you, not because it's an obligation that you have to have done.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the food and planning, you know, because nobody really knows what their Thanksgiving is going to look like. And in your case, you might have a plan and then that plan might be upended a little bit. How do we think about food and, you know, shopping during the time of, you know, shortages that we've had? Mm-hmm. What are some of your tips for getting a meal on the table, especially when there's so many things that are uncertain?
Yes. So a couple of things I want you to think about here. Number one, what are your family favorites? So we always have a green bean casserole on the table. And I asked my husband, he said, nobody eats it. Don't even bother. So we don't need to do that. Or like in our family, our whole entire family likes pumpkin pie, but my husband likes pecan pie. You can buy a slice of pecan pie at a drive-thru and add it to a whole pumpkin pie. Like you don't need to have a whole pecan pie because one person wants a piece of pecan pie. And then the last question I would ask you is, I'm a horrible cook. So do you want the food or do you want to cook it? And if you're going to cook it, all of it or part of it? So are you going to cook the turkey and buy all the sides? Or are you going to make all the sides and buy the cookie turkey already done? Are you going to cook it all? Are you going to cook none of it? I mean, there are a lot of restaurants where you can order the entire Thanksgiving already created for you. And you could do that for Thanksgiving Day. Or last year we did that just to have on hand for leftovers.
Yeah. And now is a good time to think about some of those favorite restaurants and locally and giving them the support that they have. All right. So, you know, I live in South Dakota. I think you live in what, Ohio?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's going to be snow. And again, unexpected, you know, this winter is going to be different. We're not going to be able to get out in some of the ways that we love to do around here. We got lots of wide open spaces, so we'll spend a lot of time outside. Don't worry. But we're living in this house that maybe after 9 months is not looking quite as organized as we thought it was going to because things are in chaos. So let's talk a little bit about some early ways to tame a little bit of that. And before I ask you that for some tips, some actionable tips, like why is it that we're seeking that kind of control in our lives right now? Like not overdoing it, but just, you know, we kind of crave being able to control our home environment when so much is out of control.
Exactly what you just said. It is one of the only things that you can control. You can't even control the people that you're quarantined with, but you can change where you store your socks and underwear in your bedroom. And even though it makes no sense and you might change it back a month later, like that physical act of doing something physical and having an input on your environment that then stays there when you're done really does change the endorphins and everything inside of your body. It gives you something to do and gives you a feeling of being proactive in your environment when there's very little that you're in control of this year.
All right. So let's start with the people who are overwhelmed by this right now. What's talk to them.
Yes.
It's a snow globe.
Exactly. So I figure it's probably adults that are listening to the podcast, but it could be children as well. I speak to all ages. And I would say to you, here are the rules of organizing. Number one, start with you. It's going to be so easy for you to see how everyone else in your family should be getting organized and what piles they have that are unorganized. And I want you to focus on your own piles and your own space. So your nightstand, your bed, your closet where you keep your clothes, how you get ready in the morning, and the bathroom products that you have. If you're the female or male head of household and you're in charge of the kitchen, then go ahead and organize the kitchen for the whole family. But there's a lot that you can do that is just your personal space first, and start to get your traction under you before you start tackling the other spaces with your family.
All right. So I was one of those kids, Lisa, that my mother would come and tell me to clean my room. And she would, you know, she clearly had had enough of me at this point. And she would say, I'm going to give you an hour. And whatever you don't put away, I'm going to take away, right? Mm-hmm. And that might be a really good parenting tip from, you know, the 70s, I guess. But this is what happened to me. I would pick up one little bunny and one little teddy bear, and I would cry because I couldn't choose which one I was going to have to give away, when really I could have put them both away in a very short period of time, because I hadn't learned the skills. There are so many of us who didn't learn. I'm picking on my mom, but, you know, never was there a time where it was like, it was so natural to her to clean that she didn't get that my brain did not work that way. How do you help people who just never learned the skills, and now they're adults and they have this emotional baggage too from childhood and feeling like this is something they can't do?
Well, I love, Lori, that you went all the way back to your childhood bedroom. And that's so true. A lot of us learned to get organized as kids, and some of us didn't. And for the ones that didn't, I find, especially for women as they age, if they did not figure out how to get organized as a child, then they feel defeated and that there is no point as they get older. And that is not true. Anyone can learn to get organized. There are four different phases of organizing. Like every 20 years, you need different organizations. So the first 20 years are in your childhood bedroom, then your 20s and 30s is your first house and, you know, acquiring all the things you need in there, and sometimes spouses and kids as well. Your 40s and 50s are a different kind of organizing, and then 60 plus is another kind of organizing as well. So even if you don't move, you need different organizational skills as you age and they develop. But if we go back to you as a child, because everyone can relate to being that child in the bedroom that had to organize their room. The problem with how we teach children to organize their bedroom is we don't teach it. And we assume that everything in that bedroom is one category. Whereas we as adults, we have a kitchen, we have a bedroom, we have whatever our makeshift office is, we have a family room, we have a front hall coat closet. We have all these different spaces that we can organize. So if we're going to put a coat away, we're going to go to the front hall closet to put it away. If we have a work or a paper item, we're going to go put that wherever our makeshift office is. We're not going to put that in our bedroom. But for children, I don't call their bedrooms their bedrooms. I call it their mini apartment. And when you think about it as a mini apartment, then you start to realize we have all those zones in that tiny bedroom. And the older you get as a child, when you're 12, 14, 16, these adult apartment zones start to show themselves. I mean, my kids had TVs and mini refrigerators and food in their bedrooms by the time they were in high school. It was a mini apartment. And when you look at it as a mini apartment, then you organize clothes and then school supplies, and then toys or passion projects, and then food and kitchen. And like when you do categories, it becomes easier to clean your bedroom.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about some of the things that are unique to the pandemic. And one of the things you did recently was to talk about medical information and how people should really be getting some of that information, that sort of intangible stuff together, which goes back to the paper solution book. And so let's start with pandemic newness for people and really prioritizing, like, what are some of those urgent tasks that really need to be organized now in 2020 that maybe you hadn't thought of before?
You know, the thing that was the most surprising is we came out with emergency medical packet, which you can still download at organize365.com/emergency. It's a big packet that you can download and write down what medications are you on, what are you allergic to, you know, all of those medical facts. We feel like our medical facts are digitally documented, and sometimes they are, but they aren't always documented at the hospital that you end up at. So if you haven't been in a hospital or you're in a different network, you may not have your information. And when we came out with that packet, it was 2 days later that they stopped letting people go into the hospital with you, and they shut down the hospitals for visitors, which I never in my life ever thought would happen. And you probably before the pandemic didn't think that would happen either. And we don't realize how much of our information that we have in our brain or we have in other locations that aren't even on paper that we get asked routinely when we go into the doctors. Taking, you know, a couple of hours and filling out that paperwork for yourself, for your parents, for your spouse or your children, if you have them, so that you have all of that information. I cannot tell you how many stories we've had of people who filled out that paperwork, literally put it on their spouse or their parents as they sent them into the ER, and that's the last information they had. And then the medical personnel calling and crying and saying, thank you so much. Like being able to see it so fast, the medications, the things they're allergic to, we were able to immediately start treating instead of guessing, especially with COVID when it's hard to breathe or you're coughing or you need to be on a ventilator, you can't answer questions and there's no one there to answer for you.
Ken, have you found in your work that there is also an opportunity for growth during this time, that people are finding their feet in new ways? How have you seen that in the previous months?
I think that nothing is unquestionable right now. Like I'm starting to see articles come out this week that, you know, 61% of women are going to have a different career at the end of the pandemic. Like they've just decided to make very big life choices. I remember the very beginning of the pandemic, I was already an online business. Zoom was not new to me. E-commerce was not new to me. And I said, wow, we are having like every month is like a year. And within a month or two of the pandemic starting, they said, we are making 5 to 10 years growth in the last couple of months. It is amazing how fast things are happening. And so the one thing I would say is our brains are having a hard time keeping up with the pace of change that is happening in so many sectors, in our jobs, in the way that we provide, like just basic shopping, in our holidays. We still have not been through a year of the pandemic, so we don't know what December, January, February really look like until we physically experience it. Give yourself a lot of grace. Don't make any rash decisions, but I also think that we already know we're not going back to 2019 when we're at the end of this. But be open to the possibility of some brand new thing entering your life and really changing the direction of your family going forward.
And don't forget to take a little time to breathe, to stretch out, to pay attention. Yoga and mindfulness can serve as fantastic tools during these trying times. Karen Buxell is founder and teacher at Soul Yoga Collective, and she joined us with insights into how we can practice these techniques from the comfort of our own homes. Karen, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
Based on your training and experience, why does breathing matter in times of chronic stress?
Such a great question. And yeah, you're right. This is daily. We are working with people, you know, in our studio, in our classes, with our private clients, really teaching them how to connect with that breath. And, you know, the truth is that so many of us, well, pretty much everyone, especially these days, we're really kind of stuck in the sympathetic nervous system when it's fight and flight, go, go, go. You know, life is coming at you at such a hectic pace. Even before the world turned upside down a few months ago. Mm-hmm. So these days, it's really about connecting with the breath, bringing breath and body to a very mindful focal point. And it then kind of taps into your, you know, the nervous system that rarely gets a chance to come on board, which is the parasympathetic. And those are all big words that aren't necessary, but it's a felt sense in the body. If you can get into the breath and slow it down or have some specific ways to use your breath, it's a notable shift in mental stress, physical stress, emotional well-being. Things will shift.
Help us figure out these different ways that you can connect with your breath in different places and different scenarios.
Yes, and I love that. And that's really what we teach our students at Soul, is that, you know, this hour you spend on your mat is fantastic, but it's not going to do much to you unless you take the practices into your daily life. So you take it to the office, you take it to your car, you take it to the interactions you have with your family, you take it to the dinner table, you take it everywhere. So it really is about, you know, when you find your mind starting to take you someplace that maybe you don't really need to be going, that's a stressful thought. If you start to feel the body tense up because your mind is going to those areas, it's really it's like a little nod or a little tap tap from your body, from your mental state, tapping you on the shoulder to say, hey, you can tune in here, soften your shoulders, take 3 deep breaths. You can do that while you're driving. You can do that while you're in the shower. You can do it anywhere and everywhere. And that's the idea, is that you start to really tune in, and body will send the signals. And then you just make it a response to what you're hearing, rather than adding one more thing I'm supposed to do every day. You already have enough of that.
Yeah. Does it matter if it's, I'm breathing through my nose with a closed mouth, I'm breathing out? Are there ways to sort of think about how to breathe?
Sure. Well, you know, there are so many breath exercises for very specific reasons. So in order for people not to overthink it or complicate it, it really is breathe however feels necessary in the moment that gets you in the moment, like present, noticing how you're feeling. But, you know, a general thing is to close the lips, take some long breaths in through the nose, long breaths out through the nose. That really regulates the emotions. So if you can slow the breath down, like however you need to do it, if you have a cold, you're not doing it through the nose. So any way that you can slow the breath down, count it. You can bring a count to the breath. So you're breathing in for 4 and breathing out for 4. And so bringing any sort of regulation to that breath will regulate the stress response. Your emotional self will chill out.
Repeat as needed. Sometimes
every other minute. Yeah.
Help people think about the importance of moving your body at this point, beyond, you know, just taking a walk around the block. But where does yoga come in to that full picture of our physical health when it comes to moving our bodies?
Sure. You know, yoga is, at its very essence, it really is about building this connection. Yoga means union. So we're looking to build a connection between the mind, the breath, the body. And I like to kind of take it further and look into the emotional body and the spirit. You know, we all are of spirit in some way, however you define that. So we are multifaceted human beings. So we're stuck in our head most often for most hours of the day. So stepping onto your mat or whatever space you want to go and connect with your body, it may sound, you know, out there, but moving your body, even stretching long on the mat and doing a big long stretch and just holding that and feeling and starting to kind of take a tour through yourself to notice, like, wow, my low back is really angry right now, or my goodness, I never realized I had so much tension that I'm holding in my neck. So as we can start to really listen to what our body is telling us all the time, it can whisper and we can honor it. The less we listen to it and the less we honor it, will start to scream. And then we end up with injuries and disease. So good practice.
You said the emotional body. What do you mean by that?
Well, we're emotional beings. So everything we've experienced through our lifetimes, every thought, every memory, every physical experience we've had, it tucks itself away inside of our bodies, our cellular memory. So moving the body kind of is a way for the anatomical structure, the physical being that we are, to sort through and process various things that we're working on. So oftentimes in yoga class, people will have an emotional response sometime during class. you know, maybe mm-hmm. there'll be some tears or there'll be a laugh or something. And it's just very common. And people wonder if that's normal. And it is absolutely normal. But as we get into the body and allow ourselves to get curious and look around and feel, you know, oftentimes it's not comfortable to go towards the feelings, but unless they're processed and really dealt with, they'll just store themselves somewhere in the body until we do look at those and deal with them.
So how do you coach people through the act of courage that it can take to face what the reality is in your physical life and what's going on with you right now?
Yeah.
How do you
right.
help people be brave enough to find out what's on the other side of that breath?
Sure. Well, you know, it's really true that what we resist persists. So if you really, really don't like to do the dishes, so you just stop doing the dishes, and every day you're not going to do the dishes aren't going anywhere. They're going to be there, and they're going to be, you know, nastier and stinkier than ever. So it really is, you decide, you know, you get to that point, and we teach our students, you face it today or you face it later. And when you face it later, it's going to be more challenging because you will now have manifested into bigger concerns, perhaps actual physical disease in the body. And that sounds so big and, you know, scary, but it really is true, you know, that the body will speak to us. And if we are listening, we can befriend it. If we are denying it and avoiding it, it's just going to keep talking a little bit louder and a little bit louder until now we're facing back surgery, whereas before it could have been 5 minutes of gentle movement on a yoga mat. You know, and with the illness piece and all of us staying healthy right now, it's honoring the health that you have today and sitting in that health and breathing right into that health and continuing to see your future self exactly as you are today, healthy and vibrant and doing well. You know, so it's not that we're defending and preparing against some big thing, but we really, you know, just even breathing and spending a few minutes visualizing how it feels in your healthy body today and staying in that state of health and vitality and making the small choices that keep you there on a daily basis.
Yeah. So I've asked you a lot of questions to sort of help people enter something into the space for the first time. You know, how do you breathe? How do you, you know, begin? But for someone like you who's been doing this for a long time and really connected with people who are deep into the yoga practice, what has yoga and mindfulness and breath work, however you want to define it, what has it done for you in 2020 that you think, wow, if I didn't have this in my life, it would have been a really different year?
It has really kept me sane, quite honestly, to know that it's very easy to go into a mental headspace and start letting the thoughts run wild. But if I'm literally sitting down, I have a daily meditation practice. And if you know, as I sit and I train myself, because that's what you're doing when you're meditating or doing yoga, it's a training. You're training to still your nervous system, settle your mind, calm your heart, you know, feel your body. Then suddenly all the worries and the sometimes made up stories can't help but fall away, because the reality is, oh, I'm breathing in right now. Oh, I feel my feet on the floor. Oh, I hear the bird singing. So it really just cuts away all the noise and helps connect to what's actually real, that right now I actually am really okay and really happy, and my children are here, and, you know, just the simple things of letting the noise fall away. And it doesn't always happen. You know, the noise is very loud and sometimes it's going to come in, but even noticing that, like, oh, the noise has arrived. I'm going to let that float on through, and I'm going to come back to what's real right now.
With that, let's relax a minute.
We offer you a little music from Sundays. It's a project from South Dakota artist Wes Eisenhower and Brandon Frommany. Their new EP is worthy of deep listening. Here's a track to help you take a few minutes to just be. Stress is a normal part of everyday life. There's no way to totally escape it. It even has its advantages. But chronic stress can lead to big problems. So remember, it's okay to take a minute, an hour, maybe even a couple days off. In South Dakota, we're pretty good at taking care of each other, but it's okay to take care of yourself too. The In the Moment podcasts are produced by Josh Heyer. The In the Moment team includes Josh, Chris Loffrey, Steve Swemke, and me, Lori Walsh. Be well, and thank you for listening.